Hey you, before we jump into this week's episode, just a quick reminder, make sure you're on the Sex Gets Real newsletter, which you can sign up for at sexgetsreal.com, because not only am I teaching even more in-person workshops at Secret Pleasures in DC this October and November, but several of you have asked for online versions of the workshops that I'm teaching, which is Blowjobs for All Bodies, Anal Sex 101, Thriving Relationships, Dirty Talk, Hand Sex, and From Curious to Kinky. So I am going to actually have online versions of those workshops. You can attend them from anywhere in the world, and those will be available in the next couple of months. So make sure you're on the newsletter. I'll be announcing the dates for those and the times very, very soon. I would love to see all of you in those and get a chance to actually interact with you live and do some fun exchanges and teaching. So here is this week's episode. Hey everyone, Dawn Sarah here with Sex Gets Real. And this week I have a feeling this is going to be a super animated chat. I'm so excited. Welcome to the show, Yana. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. So I just want to introduce you to all the listeners, and then we're going to just like roll around in like pleasure and orgasms and threesomes and open relationships. And I think we're just going to like massively geek out.
Yes. I'm ready. Those are the things I roll around in often. So.
Yay. Okay, good. Well, to everyone listening, with me today is Yana Talon Hicks, and she is a consent, sex, and sexuality writer and educator living in Northampton, Massachusetts. Her work centers around the belief that pleasure-positive and consent-based sex education can positively impact our lives and the world. And
no big deal.
Yeah, I know. And like, that's, I think, you know, one of the things that gets overlooked so often in all of the sex education that's happening right now is the pleasure aspect.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about consent, and we talk a lot about, you know, and then more in the more traditional sex education world that's happening in schools, it's all about like, don't get pregnant, don't get STIs.
Yeah.
And we so often forget that like, we're doing all of this because it feels good.
Yeah.
So how can we maximize that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that, you know, I do a lot of education around consent work these days. That's kind of been what people are really interested in for good reason, which is amazing. But a lot of like the traditional consent education kind of treats it like a DARE program, you know? They're like, just say no, don't do drugs. You know, it's kind of this like finger wagging, restrictive model.
Yes.
And so the model that I really try to focus on talks about why consent not only makes for an ethical sexual experience and a non-traumatizing sexual experience, which of course is important, but also makes for a more pleasurable and enjoyable and enthusiastic sexual experience, which often for some reason gets left out of the traditional conversation about it.
Yeah. And what's so interesting to me is what you just said about when we're enthusiastic about something and we're feeling good about it, it's so much easier to do. And I think that's where so often we have a disconnect between like sex experts and kind of like the public is all of us have learned how being really enthusiastic and being really open and communicating really well literally is fun and leads to like all of this pleasure. But there was a learning process that all of us went through. And I think that's the part that's not so transparent to people who were like, well, that just sounds awkward and horrible. I don't want to talk about that personal stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the thing that I usually talk about a lot in my workshops is kind of giving yourself permission to like screw it up or like, you know, like to like fall off the bed or like, you know, like the first time I ever put on a strap on, I like spent a lot of time jumping around in the bed, like wagging it around.
Yes.
To like get used to it. And like, that's not really what you're going to see in a traditional porn. So it's not really what's ingrained in our brains as traditionally sexy. But it like really helped break down sort of this barrier to like talking about sex.
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree. So first, before we jump into a little bit more about pleasure, I know that you just did a TEDx talk in Vienna, all about the porn brain as our new sex educator. So what was that like?
What was my talk like, or what was the actual experience like?
Both.
So the actual experience was sort of mind blowing. I got the email to invite me to do the TEDx talk, first thing in the morning. I rolled over and kind of looked at my phone, which is tends to be how I wake up in the morning. And it was hey, you should come to Vienna and give a TEDx talk. And I was okay, this is spam, because obviously I write about sex a lot. So I get a lot of very strange emails. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't really believe it. And then in the email, the woman that had emailed me was a little bit of a super fan, which is amazing. And she was geeking out about everything I had written in great detail. And I was oh shit, this is for real. So yeah, I just ended up getting in touch with them, and they're yeah, we want to fly you to Austria so you can talk about all the things that you love to talk about to 500 Europeans. And then we're going to broadcast it all over the place. And I was oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I could do that. Sure. And I was actually in Europe when I got the offer.
Wow.
On vacation. So part of the process was figuring out can I act a famous person and go to Europe twice in a 4-month period. So that was really cool. That made me feel pretty glamorous. So the whole, and I have a lot of anxiety. It's mm-hmm. hilarious to me that my job has turned into me talking to huge amounts of people. So that sort of battle was pretty, pretty amazing, but the whole experience was awesome. I felt I don't know, being able to blast off about that kind of stuff that I really love to talk about in such a public way was really amazing. But yeah, the actual content of my talk, it starts off with me talking about watching porn with my husband on our living room couch, and sort of goes from there about what is it that we learn about pleasure from porn, because no one else is talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, congratulations on getting that invitation and getting to experience that and go to Europe of all places, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll have a link to your TED Talk on the Sex Gets Real website for this episode so everyone can go watch it and check it out.
Please do.
And you're so right, that the way most of us learn about pleasure when it comes to sex is from porn. Mm-hmm. And then kind of as a secondary, Hollywood movies, reading magazines, and talking to our friends.
Totally.
Which are all very biased and skewed in a variety of ways.
Yeah.
So.
And I like to tell people, I am not anti-porn by any means. I think a lot of porn is super amazing. I think that we have this weird social script that tells us that all porn is created equally, mm-hmm. which is totally not real. And so I think that there's some really harmful porn out there. And I also think there's some really amazing porn out there. And mm-hmm. I don't want to group those things together. But I do think it's important to think about what is it, why are we left to piecemeal a pleasure-based education mm-hmm. together for ourselves? And sort of how does that fold into this idea of what consent looks like? Because so much of what's depicted in a mainstream porn sense is that Joe delivers a pizza, and all of a sudden Jill is bow chicka bow wow and is on the kitchen counter, and no one's talking about it at all. No one says anything.
Right.
And then all of a sudden Jill and Joe, I forget, was his name Joe or Jack?
Joe, yeah.
Joe and Jill are having these explosive mutual orgasms mm-hmm. in unison, and literally nobody has any idea how it happened.
Right.
Pizza to orgasm, no talking. Right. And that's the pleasure education, the consent education that we have. We're cool, this is how orgasms work. This is how pleasure works. And it's whoa, what? That's not real.
Yes. And I think that's the disconnect too, is we forget. And I've talked about this on the show with so many people. So our listeners are we get it. But we forget when we're watching it just how scripted, edited, and fantasy it is.
Totally.
But because there's nothing else in our life filling in this script about what pleasure and sex look like, we take it as reality.
Totally. Yeah. And it really, like, and I think that what I'm hearing from you is, like, for your listeners, it feels like they're beating a dead horse about that a little bit. But I think it really, like, kind of, like, worms its way into our brains mm-hmm. in ways that we don't even realize. Like, yep. like, we can sit here, like, at our desks and be like, yes, porn is scripted and my life isn't. And so, like, we need to talk about it. But when you're really in the moment, it's amazing how many people, like, really aware sex positive adults still feel this pressure to be sexy by accident.
Yep.
And yep. like feel like you're doing it wrong if you're like speaking or laughing or mm-hmm. any of that fun stuff. And so,
or if taking breaks, I've had clients yeah. in the past who felt like they were failing in the bedroom because they had to stop and go pee. And so right. the assumption is when I come back, we've lost the moment and now everything is ruined. Or, right. you know,
I hate the moment.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, just kind of these like stories that we internalize about like sex should look a certain way or feel a certain way, or we should behave a certain way. We're in a certain position. And I was just talking to somebody, it must have been Dylan on a recent episode. Somebody was feeling like they failed in the woman on top position because she got really mm-hmm. exhausted. And yeah. it's kind of like, yeah, that's an exhausting position. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And like porn is making it look like she's going forever and ever in these positions, right. but she also like practices it a lot and there's lots of cuts and edits. And, right. you know, for most of us, like bouncing our entire body on someone gets really yeah. exhausting.
Totally. Yeah, that is real.
Yeah. So, tell me a little bit about how you talk to people about pleasure-based consent.
Yeah. So I, like I said, sort of earlier, is I think that a lot of the time our consent education, first of all, is happening. It's too little too late. It's sort of after something has happened instead of getting in front of something happening, mm-hmm. Especially on college campuses, which is where I tend to go speak. So that is really challenging. And then the other challenging part about consent, or at least the kind of traditional conversation around consent that has been happening, is that it really is very gendered, and it sort of focuses on this idea that consent is about telling men where they can't go mm-hmm. and what they can't have. It's almost like consent has become like a favor to women.
Yeah.
In a weird way. And sort of like, you see that coming out with, like, there was a student, I think in the UK, who got like a little bit famous because he protested going to a consent event by saying, this is not what a rapist looks like.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, well, a rapist doesn't look like anything. Right. A rapist is defined by what they do. Mm-hmm. But it just, that really highlighted the gendered part, where it's like this young man feels that the consent conversation is somehow against him mm-hmm. based on his gender. And it's like, whoa, okay, no. So pleasure-based consent really makes consent everyone's priority. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it takes the gendered aspect out of it. So we're not erasing people by gender and also by who they decide to sleep with.
Yeah.
Because consent has also been built as like a heterosexual, cisgendered priority, right?
Yes.
So it's like the LGBTQ community is suddenly left out of this like traditional narrative of like what not like non-consensual sex looks like. And that's really dangerous. So I think that pleasure-based consent really sort of evens the conversation in a way. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And something that interests me about that approach is I take issue with how we simplify cis male pleasure.
Yes.
And there's this narrative in our culture that basically if a person with an attached penis has a hard penis, then it's easy to get him off and you don't really have to know very much other than like how to yank it, suck it, or jump on it.
Right.
And I get so many questions from people who feel like there's something wrong with them because they have a penis and it takes them a really long time to come, or they don't feel the same things they feel like they're supposed to in the head of their cock or whatever it is. And so I really like this, like degendering of talking about pleasure and consent, because there's so much nuance in all of our bodies, regardless of gender and genitals. And anything that helps to bring that nuance in, I think, is a really wonderful thing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, I think what you're saying is sort of like dicks have been framed as like the genitalia that don't need instructions,
right?
Or don't need active consent practices of asking people what they want and what they like and how they're feeling and how it's going. You know, they're kind of like framed as like, you know, I have an erection and now I need something.
Yeah.
And like that's built into my way of being. And then that's sort of how that consent conversation becomes like, oh, let me tell you where your dick can't go.
Yep.
And it's like, whoa, that's not helpful. That's not helpful at all. So the pleasure-based consent part, you know, like we have a ton of fun. I bring like a huge bag of sex toys with me. We talk about how to integrate consent into like using sex toys together. We talk about like integrating consent into like trying to find each other's orgasms and what feels good. So we kind of go around, like if the front door to consent conversation is like, this is what you can't do, the back door is kind of where we're coming from, which is like, how does this increase pleasure for everybody, and telling us where you can go, you know, like,
yeah,
having a container around your sex life isn't just saying these are my limits, but it's also saying, hey, look at all this awesome space that we have to play around in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think that I'm glad that places are talking about consent more, but I do think the conversation has become kind of one-sided, in a way that isn't accessible to people. Like, people are shutting down because they feel like they're being told that they're bad or something.
Yeah. And also just, so often the conversations I see happening, especially on college campuses, is one, about the college legally covering its ass.
Right.
And two, it's really about all the things not to do. And it doesn't help people in those gray spaces. And it doesn't help people figure out, like, what am I okay with? It's just, right, Here's all the things I'm not okay with. And right, So many of us have real trouble articulating what we like, what we want, how it feels, because that's not ever part of the conversation.
Right. And that's sort of where those workshops hinge on, is like, where is your enthusiastic yes?
Mm-hmm.
How can you give yourself permission to experiment, to find it? Like, how do you even find it at all? And then how do you communicate that to your partner? And then how do you also hear your partner's enthusiastic yeses? And like, I always tell people in those workshops, like, I am technically a sexpert, but like, I don't make any assumptions about who I'm sleeping with at all. And I have never, ever given anybody a mind-blowing orgasm without hearing them say yes a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And also say no, or not like that, or you're doing it wrong, or like, could you do something else? Like, it's just part of the conversation. We can't just like assume that we know what we're doing just because like a movie told us that it goes like this.
Yeah, you're so right. And that's something that I really want all of us to be talking about more, is when I give my partner pleasure, like just amazing pleasure, it's usually because I've either asked a lot of questions along the way, and so I'm kind of zeroing in on like, ooh, here we are. Here's like the pleasure zone. Here's what feels good today. Or because they're telling me like, oh, I want this, I want that, I want this. And I'm responding to that information. And then I seem like a rock star because I'm listening and I'm asking questions. I have to say, if I'm with someone and they're silent, or they're not really helping me figure things out, I feel pretty terrible about what I'm doing.
I've really tapped in like to this feeling of like, I, of course, like as somebody that practices consent in my sex life, I hear yeses from people right before I do anything. But I'm also really tapping into the difference between a yes and an enthusiastic yes, like in my personal life. And I feel like if my partners aren't enthusiastically yes about something, like it isn't going well for me.
Yeah.
Or them, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what people really forget, is that consent seems like a one-sided conversation or experience, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. Like, the person asking the questions also needs to know that they're doing something that feels good to their partner. Otherwise, yeah, they probably feel pretty lackluster.
Yeah, and even, like, being really enthusiastic about being unsure. Like, it's okay for me to choose to do something that I'm not really interested in doing, but I know my partner's super interested. And so I really am enthusiastic about their interest. And I'm going to do this thing that I'm kind of like, I don't know if this is my thing, but it sure seems to be your thing. So, like, let's try it. Something popped into my head while we were talking about dicks. And it just made me like laugh because I just did something recently where like it was one of those like kind of awkward mistake things. And I feel like I should just share it because we're talking about how we don't like as educators, there seems to be this kind of like, oh, everybody knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I hate that. I honestly hate that. Anytime I have a new partner, I'm like, listen, anything that you've read in my sex column is all a facade. Like, I don't have any game. I'm going to ask you so many questions. I really would love some affirmation. You know, I am like the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, so I actually haven't announced this on the podcast yet, which is kind of weird, but anyway, I'll just say it now. So for listeners that don't know, who don't follow me on Instagram, a couple of months ago, Alex and I actually got married. So Alex is now my husband. Yeah. Like 2 weeks ago, Alex and I were messing around and having fun, and he was straddling my chest and I was jerking him off, and he was getting all excited and he was feeling good. And I was like really turned on by how turned on he was, and like everything was feeling good. And I could tell things were really going in a great direction. And then he was like, oh my God, I'm about to come. And so I just kept jerking him off, and I totally forgot you have to aim cocks when they come. And so it went in my eye. And then I like jerked sideways, and I was like, keep jerking your mom off. And so I jerked sideways, and then his cum like went in my hair and my ear. And it was just one of those moments afterwards where I was like, well, that was a fail. So it happens to the best of us.
Yeah, no, I totally empathize with that. I also just got married a couple of months ago.
Yes, you did.
Kind of funny. I haven't been with cis dudes in a while. Yeah. So penile ejaculate is kind of a newer substance for me. So I'm also kind of doing the thing where I'm like, okay, wait, what am I doing?
I have to aim the thing and do the thing. Yeah. And, yeah. That's really fascinating. Yeah, listeners know I was with, I was in lesbian relationships and then a trans butch relationship for like 14 years, and I had no contact with cis dudes.
Yeah.
And then like a couple of years ago, I started taking cis male lovers, and it was this whole like, oh my God, I have not touched a penis in 14 years. What do I do?
Yeah, I think my break was like 8 years. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's like, it's really strange to like go, like, you're like, oh, okay, like, I know how to educate people about this anatomy, but when it comes down to my real life, I'm like, wait, am I doing this right?
Right. Yes. Oh, the struggle is so real.
Yeah. Penises are not easy, you know, like coming back around to the narrative about penises being easy. It isn't necessarily, you know, you're like, wait. This is a whole different thing.
Everyone is a snowflake. Everyone is different.
Everyone is a snowflake.
Mm-hmm. So I would love to shift gears just a little bit. One of the things that you mentioned when we were kind of getting ready for the episode via email was how many questions you get from hetero cis women who really feel like they're broken because they can't orgasm. And as an educator, it's this constant, you aren't broken kind of narrative that we have to share. And I got this really fascinating question from a husband about his wife's orgasms. And I thought it might be kind of fun for us to just like tickle it a little bit.
Cool.
Okay. So here is the email. It says, "Hi, Dawn. I'm curious about something and I thought I should ask. My wife and I endured a 4-year long distance relationship before getting married. Needless to say, we had a lot of phone sex. She had mentioned that she was able to reach orgasm without having any physical stimulation, and I honestly doubted it until a few years into our marriage. I basically just have to hug her from behind and talk dirty to her as she grinds her hips, and then she comes. Have you ever heard of this, Jay?"
Damn, that's magical.
I know. I thought so too. I was like, wow, that's really fascinating. And I love that he's asking this question, because I think one of the things our culture teaches is skepticism around orgasms for folks who have vulvas.
Yeah.
And like, are they faking it? You can't really tell. Is that real? Or feeling betrayed because there was faking, or not believing certain orgasms because they don't look like porn. And so I loved this question. And I'd love to know kind of like, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thoughts is that it sounds like if he's writing the question in to you that he's concerned about this in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've had a bunch of people with vulvas kind of like write in and be like, oh, like I can only get off with my Hitachi. And like, I really feel like I need to learn how to get off a different way to please like my boyfriend.
Yep.
Cause he wants to feel like he's doing it, like he's doing something. And you know, it's like in the case of this person that can get off just by getting hugged from behind, which rule.
Yes.
And like, you know, and the people that are like, oh, like I've figured out how to give myself an explosive orgasm with my Hitachi. Like, that's awesome. Like, that is a gift. There's so many people that don't have that knowledge about themselves, mm-hmm. or like have a lot of shame barriers around figuring that out for themselves.
Yep.
And then to kind of like try to like put people back in the shame box once they do figure out their orgasms, mm-hmm. is like, no, don't do that. And it sounds like it might be distressing for this dude to like not feel like he has the keys to her pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is also a social script, yeah. of being like, if you're a real man, you need to have the keys. But like, no one's going to tell you about like the keys or like how to use them. You're just supposed to have them and like know how to use them.
Right. We're all magically just supposed to know all the things and do it.
Yeah. And especially if you are like a masculine person,
mm-hmm.
You are supposed to know.
You're supposed to be the giver of pleasure and orgasms.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the distress part is kind of coming from this idea that like, maybe his partner doesn't need his penis to like get off.
Mm-hmm.
That is just something that's popping into my mind. I don't know if that's true, but I guess my question for this person would be, how can he integrate this like amazing way that his partner can orgasm into a partnered sex life,
yeah.
where they both feel involved in it?
Yeah. Or even just finding ways to celebrate her doing that even more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if she has tapped into something in her body that allows her to basically use her mind to get her off, which definitely is possible. I know several people who can orgasm just from fantasy alone.
Yeah.
You know, use that. I mean, maximize her pleasure potential by making as many situations as possible where you two can roll around and enjoy that. I mean, gosh, if I was in a power dynamic with that person, I would have
so
much fun.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was like, oh, if they're like in any sort of kinky relationship, you could really do a lot pretty discreetly, like out in the world and stuff.
Oh, yes.
I'm thinking about like mall dressing rooms. Like I would imagine just changing into a bunch of outfits could be like pretty awesome.
Hell yes. Oh my God. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. That's hot.
Yeah. So I feel like if this listener needs kinky suggestions, it sounds like we already have a good Rolodex going.
Yes, we have ideas. The other thing that came up for me when I read the email was for people who are really interested in all the different ways that you can have orgasms, I highly recommend Barbara Kurelis's book, Ecstasy is Necessary.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Yeah, because I think, you know, another thing that we do is we tend to feel like orgasms have to involve our genitals and it has to involve stimulation of the genitals. And there are so many people who can orgasm in so many different ways with different parts of their bodies. I had a girlfriend who could orgasm just from like nipple stimulation and nothing else.
Yeah.
And Barbara can do like breath orgasms and energy orgasms. And there have been like, Barbara's even been in an MRI machine, I think, doing her breathgasms. And, you know, like they were able to actually see that, yes, her brain is having the exact same reaction as like a genital orgasm. And so like, it's real. And there's definitely,
I believe there's a video of Barbara in the MRI.
Oh, cool. I'll have to go find that. Yeah. So for people who are interested in exploring different ways of having like ecstatic pleasure, that's a fantastic book to read, and it'll just really open your mind to like all these different, Barbara likes to call them gasms. So like crygasms or angergasms or breathgasms or braingasms. But for me, it's really about like this ecstatic release of pleasure.
Totally. And so, and I think that that kind of goes back to this idea of like the porn brain, what the porn brain is telling us is sort of like, this is how pleasure is supposed to go. And if you're outside of that, you're doing it wrong. And it's just like, that's not real. That's not true. If you feel good, if everyone feels good, then that's awesome. And it sounds like maybe this listener doesn't feel good about some aspect of this. And I think that is really the question. It's not like, oh, is my girlfriend broken because she can have an orgasm by breathing? I think the question is sort of like, what is it about that that feels icky to him?
Yeah. And I think also just kind of culturally, we're taught to doubt other people's experiences when they differ from ours. And I just recently answered a question from a listener where she was feeling concerned that her wife gives her lots and lots of orgasms. And as a result, her wife doesn't really ever orgasm. And she was feeling a lot of distress about that setup because she felt like her wife should have orgasms. And one of the things that stood out for me around that was like, my experience of orgasms is not what I should expect of my partners.
Totally.
Their pleasure profile and what they're really enjoying can look very different from mine. And I have to trust them when they tell me they like what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think going back to this particular question is, if your wife says that hugging her from behind and whispering some dirty words in her ear and just letting her kind of like rub her thighs together gets her to come off or get off, then we need to trust her and then see if we can just play around with that and maximize it.
Right. There is nothing hotter than seeing your partner get off in a super authentic way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Oh my gosh.
Like don't overthink it.
Yeah.
Just get in that moment.
Yeah. Just like send out Christmas cards that are like, guess what we can do?
And I also feel like a lot of the people that I've had sexual experiences with, especially lately, all kind of have their own little quirky ways they get off, whether it's like having their face covered or holding their breath or being on their stomach. And all of them have apologized. They've all been like, oh, sorry, this is weird. And you're like, no, dude, like, if that's how you get off the best and the mostest, do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want.
Yep.
Like, I don't want to see you reproduce an idea of an orgasm that you think needs to happen. I want to see you feel super fucking awesome in, like, a really authentic way.
Oh, I totally agree.
Who wouldn't want that?
So hot. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to Jay for writing in. He wrote me that question a few months ago, so I'm glad we finally got to roll around in it a little bit.
Yeah, that delayed gratification.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the next question is about open relationships from someone named JJ. Are you up for that?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the email. It says, hey, ladies. So my partner and I are in a long distance relationship, and we have been since we met. We've been trying to figure out what works for us, and we've been trying an open relationship. We have both hooked up with other people, but I don't feel 100% comfortable with it. I feel like I did it because I wanted to be at the same level playing field as my partner. I feel like as women, we have it ingrained in us that we can't sleep around or that sex is sacred. And so it's harder for us to be unattached because someone enters our body, or that if your partner sleeps with someone else, then they don't care enough about you. So I feel like I'm questioning my self-worth a little and if he really does want to be with me. I want to be open and support him and what he needs while honoring myself. I also have just come into appreciating myself as a sexual being, and I want to explore what that means, both with him and without him. We have amazing conversations about this topic, and it's constantly open. I get reassurance, and he says that sex is a purely physical thing with someone else while with me there is a connection. I've just never had meaningless sex before, and I'm having a hard time understanding it. So do you have any advice on how to navigate this, or how I can know that just because he wants physical intimacy with someone else, it isn't a reflection on me? And have you ever tried it, and what has worked for you? JJ.
Damn, that's a big question.
I know. There's so much amazingness in there.
Yeah. Do you want me to go, or do you want to go?
Oh, totally go for it.
Okay. So I just wrote down some notes because, you know, that was a long question. The first thing I wrote down was not feeling 100%. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I feel like it's pretty typical when you're first beginning any sort of non-monogamy exploration is sort of this hesitancy of like, what is really this happening? but you know, that's always a good indicator of like, okay, like might be time to check in with how enthusiastic I feel about this. The other thing I wrote down was the level playing field. And I think that's a trap that a lot of people, especially people that are new to open relationships, fall into, is this idea that there's like some scoreboard being kept. And I think that it sounds like for him, sort of this unattached physical sexual relationship feels good and feels possible. And it feels like for her, unattached sort of just physical sex isn't really what she's enthusiastic about. Mm-hmm. And so to fall into this idea that there needs to be a level playing field where it's like, cool, you have casual sex with someone, I have casual sex with someone, isn't really doing her any favors and feeling 100% about it. And then the other thing about questioning self-worth, I feel like, is also really common in sort of especially beginning open relationships, because we are kind of sold this idea that a sexual and a romantic relationship are a package deal, and that our self-worth is sort of defined by this scarcity model that we're the only one giving our partner all of those things. And I think challenging that idea, especially for me in my own experiences, has been really, really helpful in thinking about why am I, like, what is it that makes me amazing and awesome and valuable that isn't just based on the idea that I'm the only person in my partner's sexual world? Yeah.
There's a lot in here that I love, and I think that she's asking some really, really important questions. And for me, it's also feeling tender, because these are things that, like, I struggle with and things that I'm still trying to unpack for myself. And so I love that this question came in, and there's so much about it that echoes my own experiences or fears or pain points. And so, yeah, the first thing I just want to say to JJ is like, I see you, and like validate all of these feelings and questions, because they're all feelings and questions I have either had recently or still have. And so that's like very real. And what I agree with you that the I don't feel 100% comfortable with it really jumped out at me, and the leveling the playing field, like that's a dangerous game to me. That's trying to do like one for one is a recipe, I think, for getting hurt. When you're not feeling 100% comfortable with it. I know that honoring the way you like sex is going to be the best way to find your way through this. And so if for your partner, he wants to have physical connections with people that don't really have emotional ties, but for you, doing something that feels a little more intimate feels right, that might mean he has like 5 sexual partners to like the one that you find that you take your time with and connect with.
Yeah. And I also like, I wonder sort of how powerful she feels in this situation. Mm-hmm. I know that like feeling like your self-worth is sort of shaky is not a powerful place to be. But I also, at the end, I heard her say like, I am just sort of starting to sexually explore myself as a sexual being, which is a pretty like awesome place to be. Mm-hmm. Especially if you are in an open relationship, because you can kind of have this really personal connection with your partner and then have this sort of sexual exploratory part outside of that, which is really great. But it sounds like kind of what you're saying, Dawn, is that like, she needs to find the way that works for her. Like, it doesn't need to be like this casual. Mm-hmm. Like, who set up that casual rule is right. what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Where is the space that she can find for what she actually wants out of this, which mm-hmm. might be like more intimate, maybe not like a one night stand type of thing.
Yeah. The I've never had meaningless sex before and I'm having a hard time understanding it. Like,
yeah.
I know that really well.
Yeah.
When I came out of my last relationship that I was in for 7 years, I decided, like, I'm going to do all the things, which meant, like, all the people. And yeah. I was like, I'm just going to have all this sex, yeah. and I'm going to meet all these hotties and just try all these things. And what I learned very quickly about myself was hooking up with people who just wanted to hook up with me one time and leave mm-hmm. felt terrible.
Yeah.
And I leave room for me to change. So that might not be my story, you know, in a few years or 10 years or 20 years down the road. But like at that particular time in my life, and I think that's probably still true now, you know, when I had those just kind of like, hey, let's hook up, let's fuck, let's flirt. And then like, I never talk to you again. I found right. myself feeling pretty fucking terrible about myself.
Totally. And if she's struggling with self-worth, that yeah. is not a good situation.
Right. And so I started finding lovers who wanted to create space where we saw each other on an ongoing basis and where we got to really build deep intimacy, even if those relationships weren't something we were ever going to turn into romantic relationships. There was mm-hmm. still this acknowledgement of, let's create a space where when we come together, there's a lot of like passion and intimacy and vulnerability. And then let's have like really delicious, slow, open sex. And then as I started figuring out how to navigate that, I also started learning, like, as those lovers left my life, it did mean a certain amount of pain or yeah. even feeling a little heartbroken, but like being okay with that experience, because what we shared when we did have that time together was so much more important than like the pain that came when we decided our time was over.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that JJ needs to have meaningless sex. If meaningful sex is something that she's interested in, then I think she just needs to negotiate what that looks like with her partner. And
yeah.
and try it out for herself, you know? And like, I think one of the things that I've learned so much about open relationships is you have to start finding a lot of resilience around fucking up.
Yeah. and change.
Yes. And change.
And those are two things people really hate to do.
Yes. Yeah. And so like, for me, I think like, it's okay to say, hey, I want to try this thing. And so you and your partner negotiate what that looks like. And then maybe you try it and you fuck it up, or it doesn't feel right, or it feels way different than you thought when you sat down and just had a verbal conversation with your partner, and then right. circling back and talking about that again. And I really love what you said about kind of like self-worth and power, because, mm-hmm. you know, I have felt like, I didn't have power in a number of circumstances, and mm-hmm. that can feel really terrible afterwards.
Yeah.
And so finding ways to take up more space and say, like, I don't think meaningless sex is what I want. So if that's what we're talking about with this open relationship, then I need something a little different.
Well, and also like these two partners are so different from each other. So mm-hmm. thinking that the same exact rules and arrangements can be blanketed to both of them is mm-hmm. pretty unrealistic.
Yeah. Yeah. And also her partner may change, you know, and I think like yeah. when you're exploring open relationships and non-monogamy, like, he might be interested in meaningless sex right now because it's just a physical act, but there is a very real possibility that he's going to hook up with someone and have a really delicious connection that he wants to explore more.
Yeah. I think that some of the, I see a lot of, so I teach sort of polyamory 101 classes to folks. And what I see a lot of is upfront people make a lot of rules mm-hmm. out of fear. Which is pretty typical. And I'm a proponent for kind of like flexible rules. So like at first you make a really safe container around yourselves with a lot of kind of rules and requests. And then they sort of get flexible over time as you learn that your partner can go have sex with someone else and then come back to you. Or you learn that they're trustworthy with the things that you agree on and all of that great stuff.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of sort of pitfall rules that people fall into is like blanket statement rules, such as like nobody will ever have feelings for anybody else, mm-hmm. because it's so hard to control that. And you're sort of setting yourselves up to either be in deep denial or be deceptive to your partner because you're trying to fit into a rule that didn't fit in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I sort of see that happening in this reverse sort of way of this rule of like, the sex will be casual.
Yep.
The sex will be casual. And it's like, if that rule doesn't fit, it's never going to work.
Yeah. And one of the things that I learned, and I'm not saying this is true for everyone, but in my experiences was, you know, a few of the lovers that I took during that period kind of upfront would say like this. Now, listeners who've listened for a long time will know this, but several of the lovers that I had back then were married and mm-hmm. not in ethical non-monogamy situations. Mm. So like they were cheating and I was the person they were cheating with, or they were cheating with multiple people and I was one of them. But, you know, kind of this like, I'm married, this can't mean anything, this is just going to be physical. And then as we started talking, realizing we actually liked each other. And then, you know, once I felt comfortable having sex with them, when we started having sex on a regular basis, realizing like we really cared about each other's feelings. And it wasn't love in a lot of the cases. In some of them it was, but you know, like I'm thinking of this one married man who was very devoted to his wife. She had a really severe illness that prevented her from having any kind of physical contact, but she was from a very conservative religious background. And so he made the choice to like take lovers outside their marriage. And I remember us like after sex laying in bed for hours, just him talking about how sad and heartbroken he was for her and for their relationship. And he wanted to know what was going on with me. And like the sex was a small part of what we ended up doing.
Right.
But we had a rule going in that wasn't going to happen. And then it did.
Right.
And so, yeah, allowing for that, allowing for, I think it's really important to like do your best going in with what you have. And then when shit doesn't go the way that you planned and it hurts and you feel betrayed or you feel like you really messed up, finding ways to be resilient through that and hold each other gently and then try again. Because I really think that in this space, it takes multiple kind of like hits and misses, oops, fall down, failures until you start really finding your version of how this works, what you need, how you talk about it, you know, and being more successful at it.
I love your use of the phrase take a lover.
Oh, well, like, thank you.
It's delightfully old school. I took a lover.
I did. I took several. Yeah. And I also really love the phrase you used about learn that they're trustworthy.
Yeah.
I think that's really important of just like learning to trust someone in a space that feels really vulnerable and scary. Yeah.
This, I mean, like to answer her last question, like, have you ever tried this? It's like anyone that has ever been in a non-monogamous arrangement, I think, has been scared shitless at some point during the process.
Yeah.
So feeling like totally terrified mm-hmm. is okay. Like, I don't think anyone is like innately like good at non-monogamy.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that we learn. And it's also something that we're not given a lot of examples of. And I think that's really terrifying too. And also totally awesome because you get to kind of create the rules for yourself.
Yeah. And as you were talking, one of the things that kind of struck me is, so she opens with, my partner and I are in a long distance relationship and have been since mm-hmm. we met. For me personally, that's presented a lot of challenges mm-hmm. around non-monogamy, because one of the ways that I feel very reassured and safe is with like physical touch.
Right.
And so when I am with my partner physically and we can talk and we can touch and we can cuddle, I feel my tanks being very full. And
right.
so I feel a lot more like abundant in my thoughts and the things that I'm willing to try and how I feel about certain things. But then when we've gone a long time without seeing each other, it starts to feel a little bit more of the scarcity model of like, yeah. oh God, I can't see you. I can't get that reassurance. So if you go out on all these dates with these people, I can't actually see your body language. I can't actually touch you physically and like reground and recenter. And so that's felt particularly scary and threatening for me. And knowing that about myself is important. So just to JJ, you know, there's lots of people who make long distance non-monogamy work really well. And everybody kind of finds their own way, the way that you just said. But like, it's also okay if you feel a little unsure and you need kind of some different types of check-ins, like seeing each other a little bit more regularly as you start this, or realizing that you need kind of some physical touch and some cuddles to reassure you. Like, learning those things about yourself so you can articulate them is also part of the process.
And also that that's not failing. Yeah. I think a lot of people, especially in communities where polyamory and non-monogamy is very popular, mm-hmm. I think that there's this idea that if we're not like chill about everything right off the gate, that we're doing it wrong. And so kind of like you, what you were saying, Dawn, like giving yourself permission to fuck up is like really what needs to happen as well. And also like what I do when I'm feeling really like down about it, it's like, I will literally sit down and write a list of why I am amazing, like all the reasons why I rule. And then sometimes I like to write down all the reasons why it's really nice to have alone time. And then I pick those reasons, like the stuff I like to do alone, and I'll do those things when I'm feeling kind of like meh.
Oh, that's a wonderful ritual.
Yeah.
I love that. And yeah. I'm so glad you said that about like, I'm doing it wrong. I know that personally, probably 40% of my just like horrible, icky, depressed feelings have come because I feel like I'm not good enough. And I'm not, I'm at this, like, it's not effortless for me.
Right.
And so feeling like there must be something wrong with me, or maybe my partner won't want to be with me because it's a little bit challenging for me to navigate. And so like giving yourself, one of the things I've had to really try to do is give myself permission to just, no, this is just my way of getting through this. And not everybody has this like effortless fall into non-monogamy, even though that's right. sometimes what it looks like when you like read the books or watch the videos.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. So yeah, just like leaving space for like, it's okay to feel kind of like, I don't really know what the fuck I'm doing and I don't really know how I feel about it. Like, it's okay to just sit in that space for a little while.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to rush out of it.
No, not at all.
Yeah, because I noticed one of the things that I've done, like one of the most painful things that I've ever done to myself was betrayed myself by saying I was okay with something that I really wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same. And that is the worst.
Oh, God. It's like to this day, one of the deepest traumas that I carry.
Yeah, same.
And so I just really want for other people to not do that. Like, as uncomfortable as it might be to say, I don't think I'm ready for that. I think I need a little more time or a little more reassurance, rather than just saying yes because you think that's what's expected of you.
You know, I'm probably going to butcher this quote, but Brené Brown says something like, daring to set boundaries for yourself is taking the risk to disappoint others, like in favor of taking care of yourself, something like that. Yeah. I'm sure she says it a lot better than I do, but I think that's kind of like, there's this like people pleasing place that people get into when they are denying themselves the truth that they don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And that, you know, disappointing your partner by saying like, you know, I don't actually think I am comfortable with this. That's important information to know so you can move forward.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Oh my gosh. Like, I have goosebumps because this just felt like so good to talk about with you.
Yeah.
Well, JJ, I hope this was helpful. If you have other questions or developments even that you want to share, please write back. I'd love to hear how you're doing and how you're navigating this for yourself. And yeah, are there any resources that you have really found helpful or comforting around this?
Yeah, you know, I was actually just thinking about this. I could send you, I have a whole resource page for polyamorous folks that come to my workshops that I can send you. But on that page, there's a lot of worksheets. There's like a jealousy worksheet that I think is really helpful. I really like reading Opening Up by Tristan Taramino and More Than Two by Franklin Vo and Eve Rickert. There's also The Ethical Slut, which has been around for quite a while, which is kind of the original one. And I think that reading books, especially the books that have worksheets and stuff like that, make me feel really good because it makes me feel like I'm learning something about myself and that's something active I can do. And also just hearing other people's experiences with it, like real experiences of feeling like confused or icky or weird, is super, super helpful, because like JJ is definitely not the only person who has ever been in this place.
Yes, I totally agree. Okay, well, I will link to all those books on the page for this episode, JJ, so check that out. And then, Yana, if you have any resources you want me to share, let me know, and I'll get those linked, too.
I'll send them over.
So since we're kind of already in this space, I have another question. It's from someone named Lady Lily, and the subject line is, "Heart is broken, please help." Oh. And it might be a little different because there's some BDSM and like power dynamics, but, I'd love to roll around in it with you, 'cause it's been sitting for like 3 months. All right. So Lady Lily writes, "I have never felt so alone, and you are the only person I can tell my story to. I live with my fiance. We practice 24/7 daddy, little girl. And in so many ways, it has done nothing but enhance our already incredible relationship. I love him more than I thought possible to love another person, and maybe that's why I'm hurting so badly right now. He's cheated on me before. In the beginning of our relationship, he was seeing other women while telling me we were exclusive. Finally, last August, everything came out in the open, and we were together. It was all of my dreams come true. And after moving in together in January, I found texts from him to other women, which ripped my soul out. He swore they were only texts, and I found it in my broken heart to forgive him. Lately, things have been wonderful, amazing, even perfect. I just found two different things with different women that have opened up all of my wounds again, though. First, he was in contact with an old friend. She's always had feelings for him, and when I found that he was hiding conversations with her, it hurt so much that it feels like he broke my trust. The second was, he was asking to go over to an old client's house for a sexy massage. He told me he had no intention of getting the massage, but was just flirting to gain access to get some money that she never paid him for work. But this is the one I'm having the hardest time with. I feel like my world is crumbling and I can't talk to anyone. I want more than anything to forgive him and work this out, but I'm so scared that I'm giving my heart away to someone who just can't take care of it. He has never been faithful to any person in his life, but he constantly tells me that I'm different and that he has truly found happiness being a one-woman man with me. I don't know if you can write me back or help, but thank you for reading this and letting me put my thoughts on paper. It felt like I was talking to a friend, which I so badly need right now. Lady Lily."
Oh,
I know. It's just like there's so much pain in this message.
Yeah. So daddy little girl dynamics are very near and dear to my heart, which I feel like makes this situation even harder, because something that, what is it, Lady Lily?
Yeah.
Something that she said was, "I feel like I'm giving my heart away to somebody that can't take care of it." Mm-hmm. And I think that in those dynamics specifically, there is such a huge caretaking element.
Yeah.
And to have that element be highlighted by someone that's like, "Yeah, like I'm going to be your 24/7 daddy. I'm going to take care of you." And then sort of turn around and do all this like behind the scenes sneaky stuff is even worse somehow. Because that dynamic is there.
I totally agree. I think especially when you have these dynamics that have either a lot of caretaking or require a tremendous amount of trust, that secrets can feel even more painful. It's like they're amplified in how much they can wound you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's like, that for me is one of the hardest things is the secrets. Like, it's one thing to do something and then tell someone about it and ask for forgiveness, but to like constantly be keeping these secrets, it feels so closed off and like you don't even know the person.
Yeah.
And like that, just secrets, no matter what they're about, can feel like such a betrayal. Because when you feel like you're opening yourself completely and sharing things and being really vulnerable, and then you find out this other person has this whole other like little box full of stuff that they've never shared with you, I think that in itself can feel like a betrayal. And then when you start adding in lies about being with other people, then it's just like crushing.
And I think it's like almost kind of extra irresponsible of the daddy in this dynamic to utilize his power in that role for like sneaking around.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a lot of power, that's a lot of responsibility. And I don't know, I would imagine that if I were another daddy seeing that, that would really piss me off.
I totally agree.
You
like,
know?
That's the antithesis to me of being like a daddy dom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's all characterized by being really nurturing and caretaking. And it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think like one of the first things that I just want to say to Lady Lily is like, regardless of whether you're a little girl, a slave, a submissive, a bottom, like, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of role you have that's kind of on the submissive spectrum. Like, you are an equal player in this world, and you get to say, I'm not okay with these things, and these things hurt me, and here's what I need going forward. And if those things don't happen, we need to have a really tough conversation because I don't feel safe.
Totally. And I agree, like, sort of a lot of people that are unfamiliar with kink practices or maybe aren't practicing them in ethical ways often think that the submissive partner doesn't have power, that that's like the way that it is. But I often think that the submissive partner has equal, if not more, power in a lot of those situations.
Yeah.
And so I wonder too if Lady Lily has sort of put, has sort of allowed herself to be convinced that she doesn't have power in this situation. And that, yeah, to feel like you have to kind of be okay with these secrets or these betrayals because of her role is a dangerous place to be. And it doesn't need to be that way.
Yeah, because like as a dom, as a master, as a daddy, you know, you don't get to take advantage, lie, manipulate, betray, and treat this person who's given themselves to you like shit. Like, that's not what this is about.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he's doing. And whether it's like conscious and intentional, or he just keeps finding himself in these situations and then making choices that are hurtful, doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, because like Lady Lily deserves to feel safe and supported and like her needs are getting met.
Yeah.
And, you know, like for me, I think like I'm not usually the kind of person that says there was some type of like infidelity or betrayal and things. Like, I think there's a lot more gray to most of these situations than we've been led to believe. And so like, I admire that he's cheated on her. They worked through it and they kind of found their way back to each other. And then it sounds like he did it again and they kind of reconnected again. And now they've moved in together and now we're at this place where it's happening yet again.
Right.
And at this point in the game, I really think that Lily needs to just get really clear on like, if this is going to be a pattern that continues, how are you going to survive this and take care of you? And that can be leaving. That can be having a conversation about needs and maybe potentially trying to open the relationship up. It can be, you know, finding a way to forgive him again, because I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. But like, you really need to decide what is taking care of Lily look like and then move forward with that. Because it, for me, it just really sounds like her daddy is not taking care of her.
Right.
And so she needs to take care of herself.
The crux of the, that's sort of the crux of that DS relationship.
Right. Yeah. And like, I'm just so sad that she's so heartbroken.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, me too. And I also just want to offer like, it can feel really isolating, and even like there can be shame when you are in a situation like this. And like knowing you are not the only person who's been in this situation. You are not the only person who's ever forgiven someone and then they've betrayed that trust multiple times. You're not the only one who was so hopeful about this daddy girl dynamic and really wanted it to work and fell in love and then it crumbled. And so I think like finding support in this, you know, from friends or from other little girls, and just finding a way to not feel like you have to carry this all by yourself is super important.
Yeah. And I would love to put out there to Lily that, you know, I've been in that situation of forgiving someone over and over again, because you love them and you want to make it work and all of that stuff. And I agree that there is a shame factor after the fact of being like, oh, like, how did I let this happen?
Yeah.
But like, that's not the case. You know, like there is dynamics are dynamics for a reason. There's a lot of moving pieces and it sounds like she's really doing the best that she can.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I agree. Like getting clear on what does it mean? Is mm-hmm. this the kind of relationship that feels good to me or feels the best to me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also just knowing like if you decide this isn't how you want to live your life, like if you decide that you don't want to keep waking up to a new broken heart and you feel like this person's going to continue doing that, you will find another person who can offer you love and support and nurturing. You can find another daddy dom, or you can find another dominant, or you can even find someone totally outside this dynamic that feels like really supportive. Like if this isn't the end of the road, it's just a fork in the road.
There's that pesky scarcity model again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I really do get the isolation, you know, like I've been in situations where I've felt either really betrayed or unsupported, or even like I betrayed myself and then sat in that pain and that shame because I was scared to like reach out to friends who might not understand the dynamics, or I was worried about like bad talking the person I was with because I loved them, or like maybe I had done something wrong. And the more I isolated, the more pain I brought on myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I know like you quoted Brené Brown already, but you know, one of the things that Brené's research has found is that like when you shine a light on shame, it shrinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that light is talking about it and sharing it with others. And like, I want to believe that there are people in Lily's life who they may not need to know the specifics. If you're not out about your dynamic and you don't have support around like your BDSM lifestyle, I'm sure there are people, or I hope that there are people in her life who, if she just says, I'm in a lot of pain and I feel really alone and heartbroken and I could just really use some like love and tenderness and support right now. Hopefully there are people who won't ask too many questions and can just be there for her.
Yeah. Oh, Lily.
I know. I don't know that I have much advice beyond that other than just like holding space for the broken heart.
Yeah, totally. That's what I was feeling. It's like, I feel like everyone can tap into that broken heart feeling where everything is just like so heavy.
Yeah.
It's a hard place to be, but it's a temporary place to be.
It is. It yeah. is. Yeah. Like as much as it feels like there's no moving through this or getting out from under the rock, like it is temporary.
Totally is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Lily, please write back and give an update if you feel comfortable sharing. And thank you so much for writing in and sharing your pain with us. I'm glad we were able to at least like honor that a little bit and hold space for you. And believe it or not, we are like past our hour.
Woo!
I know.
Look at us go.
I know. So, so I would love for you, before we wrap up, to share with everybody like your website or your social media, how they can stay in touch with you.
So I have a website. It's called YanaTalonHicks.com, which is just my name. I'm a huge Instagrammer, so you can find me on Instagram at @V_VSpot, V like vulva. I'm not super big on Twitter, but I'm on there at @V_ValleyVSpot. And yeah, I have a newsletter. I have workshop lists. I have all kinds of stuff. You can find my sex column on my website. You can ask me questions that I answer in writing. that's me.
Yay. Well, I will have links to your website and all your social media on Sex Gets Real for this episode. And I just want to first thank you, Yana, so much for coming on the show and for this like really rich discussion that just felt really like personal and awesome and great.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in and for listening. If you have questions that you'd like to ask or stories that you'd like to share, of course, you can go to sexgetsreal.com. There's a contact form where you can submit your questions either anonymously or you can share your name if you want a shout out or a reply. And Yana, I just thank you so much. I'd love to have you back at some point in the future so we can roll around in more.
I'm fangirling over here. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. Well, thank you, everybody. This is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real, and I will talk to you next week.